Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Amy.
My name's Chad.
I'm Brodor.
Okay, so to explain who Amy is the person I am currently trying out as Carla's replacement. So
that is hard f-ing core, man. That's how you know that your relationship is pretty good out of the gate. The fact that she didn't stab you.
No. That's something that I appreciate about her in general is where I typically lose women is my sense of humor. And she can actually take it and dish it back.
Now, except when we're both drunk.
Yeah, well, because then you just become, I get more belligerent and you become more incoherent. So we've got to work on that.
We do.
But so far, so good. All right. So what we're going to talk about, so this is going to be a bonus episode, which you probably already gathered from the intro. And what we want to talk about is a para-gaming issue. Not paras in handicapped or falling out of a plane, but paras in semi-related to, like paramilitary, which is why do we as gamers put up with so much BS from not just other people in our hobby? Forget that, right? I'm not talking about you're at a convention and you're dealing with hundreds or even thousands or tens of thousands of people. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about you walk into a game store and you start an open gaming table. I'm not talking about you go into an organized play event and you're at a table with whoever signed up for the event. Those levels of tolerance are a completely different animal because you're trying to be accepting of all kinds of people, assuming they're not being horrible. And on top of that, it's what, 3-4 hours and you're done. You just got to roll your eyes and walk home with a story to tell. I'm talking about our friend groups, the people that
hanging out for 3 or 4 hours and putting up with it, the crux of tolerating bad behavior from geeks.
Well, for the fact that I want to, it's not that I'm saying that's acceptable, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't, in balance in all things, I think there's a point where we have to tolerate, and then there's a point where we need to speak up. And I don't want to unpack that. Hold on. I'm not going to let you talk because I know you're going to say something. I know you're going to say something horrible.
I wasn't. We're doing a bonus episode, so I was very on point.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So it is
very magnanimous of you.
Now it's totally gone. I forgot.
Okay.
No, well, you have.
No, I actually don't remember.
Now he's being passive aggressive.
So here's the situation. Is that we're Star Wars fans, right?
I'm not.
And so we...
You love your moisture farm.
That's because it's the best idea in Star Wars.
We understand what it is like to love things that are made from people who generally have shitty ideas. But there's a good idea that comes out once in a while, and gaming for me is the same way. Most of the people that I game with have really stupid ideas, but occasionally they throw a lightsaber at me and I'm like, okay, you're a fucking stud. That is awesome. All this Jar Jar Binks bullshit that's coming 20 years down the road, totally worth the lightsaber. Totally. Right? And that's what happens.
Right. All right. I'm just trying to limit the topic because of the fact that I want to deal with a specific thing, and what randos do is a great topic. It's a different topic. And people who have genuinely bad behavior, they're being racist, sexist, they're whipping out guns at the table,
pooping themselves,
yes, all these horror stories.
Real story.
Yeah, go over to Happy Jacks if you want to hear the gaming nightmare.
Or Chris Hussey.
Yeah, or Chris Hussey.
Don't game with people that are too old or too young that they have to wear fucking diapers. That's Hussey's problem.
That's pretty old or young.
That's Chris. Yeah. Okay. We'll have to let Chris Hussey do some kind of rebuttal eventually, but
he's not allowed around butts.
But I just said butt.
Speaking of people who sniff chairs.
All right, but what we're talking about here specifically, right, is why is it within our friend groups, the people we regularly associate with, do we put up with behaviors that may not be clear? This is profoundly unacceptable, but it is unacceptable. So once again, they're not pulling guns on people.
Yeah, it's not like they're not illegality or literal, like just horribleness.
Yeah, this is not somebody shows up
saying, gaming sins.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So these are people who are disruptive. These are people who are obnoxious. These are
phones
people,
was the example.
Phones was the example. Yeah. Or these are people who are pedantic about the rules, who are overly argumentative. Once again, we're not talking about people who try to stab you or show up in their clan robes. That's not what we're discussing here.
No, what we're talking about is that it's COVID and things are coming out the other side and you're trying to put a role playing game together and you reach out to one of your friends who has, that's his seat at the fucking table. It's his seat and you love him and you know he's a talker and you know that this conversation is going to be extremely difficult. And so you're on the phone with him for 10 minutes and 27 seconds. You asked him a simple fucking yes or no question and you don't have an answer. And he's at work and he's driving down the highway and you get disconnected. So he calls you back and you're on the phone for another 12 minutes and 33 fucking seconds and you still don't have an answer to your question. And you think to yourself, even though you swore to God you would never say these words, do you know who I am? Do you know how many fucking people in the St. Louis gaming community would fucking put two COVIDs in the back of your head to sit at my goddamn table? You motherfucker, and you're listening and they know you know who I'm talking about. You fucking asshole. But I love you. And so we worked it out. But it made me mad. And like, I didn't talk
everything
to him.
I was going to say, everything about this story sounded so totally theoretical.
Right.
I didn't talk to him for two weeks,
but I just thought, like, I've never been popular. I've never been attractive. I've never been good at most things in my life, but there really are from my life.
You have beautiful hair.
Thank you. In the St. Louis nice gaming community. Too. Thank you.
You're a good interviewer.
There are people.
You're really a nice person.
There are people.
I actually really like you
who
a lot.
Literally, I mean, if I wanted this dude fucking disappeared, I would put on Facebook, get rid of person X and you have a seat at my D&D midnight game table. I mean, I could have a litany of people fucking killed.
I know. And I got disinvited before even showing up.
No!
Because you invited me to your D&D game, and then someone was the last ever heard of it.
What are you talking about, D&D game? I don't even know which... honestly, I do not know.
You thought you were in a relationship with him. These two are actually a married couple.
Yeah. No, seriously, you invited me like, hey, do you want to join my weekend game? Where I'm like, yeah, I totally do that. And then that was the last I ever heard of it.
I don't remember that conversation. I swear to God.
Okay. Their makeup sex is
amazing. I feel bad. I all do, right. Sincerely.
But, all right, but let's get back to the topic here, which is there's people in our gaming groups that have behaviors that are obnoxious, that are disruptive, that are hurtful. Once again, it's not necessarily a black and white sort of issue.
Cell phones.
Yes. And we just put up with it. We mm-hmm. don't confront it. We don't say, hey, something here needs to change. We all bitch about it behind their back. We all gossip about it. We all complain about it. We sit there and be passive aggressive about it. Somebody, you know, when they go to the bathroom, hides their phone or whatever just to be a douche. But we don't actually confront it. And why is that?
So I have a thought. So I'm not in the gaming world much yet. So that's a deep confession here, right? But I do have lots of friends who are complete nerds and are, you know, off the scale smart. And I've noticed... Number one, you always think, oh, gee, I got to get these people together because we're just going to have so much fun. And then they all hate each other, which happens all the time. But the other thing I've noticed is that the more creative you are, the more you have to give, generally you have these other aspects of yourself that are incredibly obnoxious and horrendous. And you would never put up with anybody else, but what that person has to bring to the table in every other area is so amazingly awesome. So I seriously think it's like one of those life balance things where you can't be super interesting without being like a douche or awful or just super weird in some way.
Well, and you can't, I think, be of the viewpoint that you have a sufficient intelligence or creativity to have interesting things to say, point one. Point two, or trait two, to be willing to communicate those things. So you don't just live in your own head, okay? So you have interesting things to share. You have a desire to share them. But three, therefore not also be somewhat obstinate or belligerent or whatever about you know, saying these have to exist in the context of other ideas because you feel pretty strongly about them.
Yeah. And they tend to be very married. And I'm speaking generally like just weird, smart people or whatever, which are most of my friends. So I don't know what that says about me, but generally they are also tend to be very married to a certain idea. Like they have this wonderful idea and it is a great concept. It's an incredible idea. And then they just can't move past it. And that's all you hear about.
Well, and we, as just as a hobby, right, as gamers, I mean, opinion is identity, right? And so I like a thing. And if you don't like that same thing, it's difficult for me. If you actively oppose and insult that thing, you're opposing and insulting.
Okay, well, me. Give me something I can insult for okay, fun. Well,
Star Wars.
Well, let's just take it like this.
Veronica Mars. Like, I mean, I actually killed someone in Tijuana because I just had enough Spanish to know that he said something shitty about Kristen Bell. And I said something about Veronica Mars, por qué, and he gave me a dirty look. It shot him right in the goddamn face. I mean, I was infuriated.
Well, you know, we all have our issues.
Yeah, we do. We do. So. And Broder's working on his.
Yeah,
and
his are warrants.
But I have anger issues. I do. I'm such an angry person.
No way. This is my I believe you face. What I've seen in groups, though, is it's a twofold thing. It is love and it is hate. It is people hate confrontation and they love bitching about things behind people's back.
Yes. Absolutely. I think it's very therapeutic.
If you kick someone out, that means you have to confront the problem. And most people don't like confronting their problems.
Have you kicked anybody out of a group recently in recent memory?
No, I
he has. I know that for a fact.
I have been the main. This is going to shock you. I have been the main person to kick people out of almost every group I've been in.
Not surprised at all.
And to the point that I have put an indefinite moratorium on the practice. I have told my friends
they need to step up.
I will never, after the last person I kicked out, I will never kick another person out of a group again because it's a breakup. Have you ever been in a relationship, like a romantic relationship, boyfriend, never. Girlfriend, whatever, and you broke up? Not fun. Even if it's a good thing, mm-hmm. It's not fun. And there's a part of you, this little tiny part that dies when you do it.
Yeah.
And there's healing that has to go on. And every single group I've been in over the years, different people, different groups, someone has had to go. And it is not a, well, everything's going fine. Then Chad stands up, says, you get the fuck out. It is talking with the group, trying to find solutions. We are at the end of our rope. And everybody stops talking and looks at Chad.
Yeah. And
I don't do it anymore. I mean, it hurts too much.
Kicking people out or confronting them. Okay. I don't think let's not jump all the way to kick them out. But just confronting the behavior.
People hate confrontation.
And say, hey.
But you have to.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. All right. And so let me make a couple points here. And I'm going to start with the one that I think the main reason we don't do it is because we as a hobby, and you can talk about why this is till you're blue in the face. Is it because a lot of us are social outcasts? Is it just general human nature? Are we conflict-averse individuals? You know, there's 1,000 possible reasons why, and I'm sure they're going to be as diverse as the people that have them. But what it boils down to, and I'm going to say this very bluntly, and say that until the past few years of my life, it was as true of me as it was of anyone. And so I'm going to cast a broad judgment on most people in our hobby. We are unethical cowards.
I think it's global.
And when I say unethical, what I mean by that, because ethics, as opposed to morality, specifically deals with social compacts, comes from the word ethos, you know, which means our context in society. Following a contract is ethical. Saving a baby at a risk to your own life is not ethical. It is moral. Then it's a philosophical distinction, whatever. But point being, it is easier for us to treat someone in a way that is socially unacceptable than it is for us to find that courage and do the right thing and say to this person, you need to stop behaving this way or this behavior is disruptive. And I'm not saying you have to be a jerk. Maybe you do. I mean, maybe it's that bad.
Well, there's levels of escalation, sure. Right? You know, mm-hmm. It's like it's the second game and someone won't get off their cell phone. You do not look at them and say, you filthy motherfucker, I have a gun in the car. So it's either
get out of my house before I pop the trunk.
Right. You know, that's like a beyond sort of escalation. You say, hey, man, can you put the phone down for a minute? We're trying to play a game here.
Yeah. Or catch them afterwards and say, hey, loved your contribution to the game, the first game. But as of the second game, you know, the cell phone's a bit much. And we
is the game boring? Is Facebook that interesting?
And here's the thing. I think we have hit a point, or maybe we've always been at a point, where our willingness to confront is so low that I believe it has made us fundamentally immoral people and unethical people, because we will gossip, we will bitch, we will complain, and we will let the problems continue to fester and hurt many people in the process. It is a profoundly selfish act.
I will say this. I've done this in the past and I will continue to do it because I think the analogy is important. I conflate gaming with f***ing, right? But intimacy. But intimacy, right? Like, so here's the deal. I want to get laid, and there's a tremendous amount of garbage that I will tolerate to get laid. Now, at some point, the bullshit and the abuse and the ugliness and the sameness and boredom, I'm tired of f***ing you, but it's easier to f*** you than look for somebody else new to f***. Gaming is the exact
same. You and I have two very different views on sex. Yeah.
Gaming is the same way. I have a group of people who will game with me. I have a consistent thing. There is a variety of personality conflict and management issue and bullshit that I have to deal with, but I'm gaming, right? And the occasional time that I come is worth the effort to have all these people to come over.
Fyodor,
gaming part of the metaphor, but, and you just jizzed on the character sheet, dude.
I just want you to know, the wrench is nowhere near you, but, all right?
But I get what you
will. You will tolerate a tremendous amount of malarkey and grief to get something that you want.
Wait, if so you value it. Fyodor obscene to Joe Biden slang.
So you will put up with in order to get the thing that you want, right? I want to have sex. I want to game, and I am going to put up with her bullshit or their bullshit to get the thing that I want. Couple that with the fact that
you and
we
have a totally different outlook on both gaming and sex.
Couple that you and I have a relationship, that we are friends and that we've built a relationship for a long time. I have even greater tolerance for your malarkey and your grief and all the garbage that you bring to the table.
That is a Joe Biden comment right there. I know.
Because we have a relationship and we've been friends together for a long time.
So
I'm going to put up with your crap more so than I put up with somebody else's crap.
I read this book one time. I actually lent it to Dan years ago. It obviously didn't help. It was a book on marriage counseling. But... So they have this great metaphor in there.
By the way, there is a book on marriage counseling I recommend to everyone. The problem was only one of two people read it.
Right. But, that is a huge problem.
Yeah.
So there's a metaphor in the book that applies to marriages and relationships, but I think that it applies to any relationship, friends, gaming groups, whatever. And it kind of speaks to what you're saying there. People are a bank, right?
Right.
So you have a bank, and Mike is a customer. We're friends, right? And we get a lot out of our friendship. I really like Mike. I think he has great insights. I like being around him. He's funny. I assume that he finds me interesting and funny, and he likes me too. And the interactions that we have around that Mike has with me, puts money conceptually into my bank.
Yeah.
And it fills up an account. More and more of these interactions happen, the more the account is filled up.
Yes.
Everyone f***s up.
And those are withdrawals.
Those are withdrawals. Mike says something that makes me put on a certain face that he always sees. And he's like, oh, Chad is judging me. And it's a withdrawal.
Yeah.
But it's a withdrawal against the whole account. Now, if it's something huge, like he sets fire to an orphanage in front of me, well, let's just say that drains the account. You know, there's no backup. But little stuff like that, it drains the account. It's not Mike draining the account, right? It's everyone. Everyone in my life has an account with me that I don't track. I don't keep a ledger. It's not like something. This is just a metaphor to help explain it. So Mike has so much built up that he occasionally makes little withdrawals. And I hope I have so much built up with him, and occasionally I make little withdrawals. It's not a transactional relationship. Again, don't ever think of it as, well, Mike was nice to me on this day, but on this day he called me a but on this day he had me on a show for an interview, so I guess that balances the fucking books.
Well, yeah, we're not talking.
That's the wrong way of looking at it.
Some kind of Alfred Hitchcock psycho sort of thing where, we sit down and. But everyone has it the same way.
A role playing game is the same way.
Right.
And what I have found is that in a group setting, like that's just me and Mike and our relationship. In a group setting, there's actually another account.
The group account. And there are individuals who will bankrupt it.
And
you will lose the group.
And there are individuals who will bankroll it as well, that they will put into the account. And I'm going to try not to sound egotistical here. I am a bankroller. I defend the other people in the group.
You got the money.
I do have the money. Well, I'm very loud and I'm very forceful and very charismatic. I can sell these ideas and stuff. The thing is, I also really love people, and I really see a lot of good in people. Mike hates people. He's a misanthrope. I'm not, or curmudgeon. I'm not. I love people. I see beauty in all people. So when things go bad in a group, I do some of the stuff that Dan's talking about, or at least mentioning, not examples of that. I defend people in the group who maybe shouldn't be defended, or actions that shouldn't be defended. So I'm a bankroll. I'm putting money into the group. I'm expending my personal capital with other people in the group to make up for the deficits in another person's account.
And
on the surface of it, that sounds like a good thing, but is it?
And that's what I was kind of trying to get at earlier, was our aversion to any kind of confrontation, I think, is not just an ethically or morally neutral behavior. I think it is actually, in its own way, an unethical or arguably evil behavior, because it's kind of like saying, I know there's a baby in that house that's on fire, but fire's hot and breathing smoke sucks. And so therefore, it'd be a lot easier if I just stood on this street while that baby and the father who's already been knocked out by the smoke and whatever else just die in that building. And, okay, this is an extreme metaphor, but the concept is at play in a group, that there is someone there that is causing distress to the people, and as a result is causing distress to our shared hobby. That the time we have set aside as a group, which as adults is not easy to do, we have all set aside that we're going to get together on this night for this many hours to play this game, and this may be the only bit of recreation we have this week. So particularly as a group, maybe as individuals, we do something else. But we have set this time aside, and one person is going to sit there and offend and upset or derail and keep making withdrawals from both the group bank and also individual banks. And because it's easier, we're going to just stand by and watch that happen.
The community bank is like, you know what? It's easier to lose a couple of bucks a day when we're getting in all of this money from the other members.
Right.
And so we can write down that loss, because if we do something about the loss, that's eviction proceedings, that's, you know, property management, that's counter claims, that's a lot of drama. And you know what? At the end of the day, a couple of bucks a session is not that much compared to the explosion. But to my mind, it's, and this is why, even though I'm the metaphorical bankroller for the group, I'm also the closer of the estates too. I kick people out. My view is a dual one of, I want to protect some people as long as I possibly can, because I just love people and I'm selfish and I want people around me.
Yeah.
Which we talked about on the, when you interviewed me and why that is. But I'm also the kind of person who rips the Band-Aid off.
So I have a question. Do you think that for whatever bizarre psychological reason, people tend to be destroyers or, you know, group vampires, however you want to say it, that they're actually drawn to really healthy, good groups that people are getting something out of? Because I actually have seen that myself.
I would actually go in reverse. I would say they tend to end up in the good, healthy groups because that's what's left at the end of their feeding frenzy. I mean, it's like all the bad, unhealthy groups.
I view it as layers, right? And it's kind of what you're saying there is the person who is a social vampire or a bad actor.
Yeah.
Like they're consciously being a bad actor. They're not being a good person. They're disregarding the needs of
the other
people.
A lot of times it's not conscious. They're not aware of what they're doing.
Why they're doing that is unimportant because you start peeling back the layers and it gets into they are lonely and afraid. And we as human beings, even introverts, do not want to be alone. Even the people who are introverts, and there are introverts who are yelling at the radio right now saying how wrong I am.
No, you were completely, I mean, as an introvert, I can tell you are completely right. And we are social creatures. We are, in the broadest sense, we are pack animals.
The bad actors, because they are human, must be around people, but they engage with people in the only way they know how, which is usually how they've been taught. It's the cycle of abuse.
Well,
so they engage in bad ways, or like in Mike, because I just patted Mike on the shoulder because of the cycle of abuse thing. But in Mike's case, you are not an abuser. You have been abused. So there is damage there that makes it difficult to kind of mesh groups.
I think there's another place it can come from. And this is where I'm not going to give Broder the wrench because he hasn't earned it.
Yeah. And obviously Broder has zero shits to give about the wrench.
But well, all right. But let me say something nice about Broder. Which he gets this, I'm not sure what I say, but he gets this when he stops cussing for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
Oh, it's a reward.
He very rarely gets it.
It's absolutely zero value, right? I mean, he might as well put a corn kernel from his butthole in my mouth.
This is a totem of the suffering your mouth creates for me and Aisha. And
that's a fair point.
I want you to hold it so you understand in just this hexagonal metal form that this is the icon of sin for you.
When you put it in that context, then I do feel some semblance of shame. And something
that is the name of my new metal band, by the way, Icon of Sin.
Nice.
All right, getting back to what Chad was talking about, I think you are absolutely right about the cycle of abuse, but I think there's another place it can come from, especially among people that are highly introverted or not terribly
socialized.
They have either A, no social skill, or B, they socialize with others in the way that they socialize with themselves.
Right.
That they take the mental processes that they use to navigate through life, and mostly what they're trying to do is find a system that works for them, that allows them to cope, that allows them to function, that allows them to formulate, express ideas, to feel satisfaction. But this is all very internal facing. Mm-hmm. And this is now their jumping off point. And they use that, you know, they try to deal with other people the way that they deal with themselves. Mm-hmm. And now one thing I got to give Broder credit for was Broder went down a similar path to what I did in that, yes, he walked away from his abuse with damage, but he also walked away from it with a revulsion for it.
Right.
And that was one of the things I had to grow past.
Him and his brother broke the cycle of abuse.
Yes.
And that's outstanding.
And yeah, I came from
it's tragic that it happened.
Right.
But
right.
It's outstanding.
But in my case, similar to Broder, now the details are all different, but I came from a situation that was full of conflict, full of judgment, all these things. And
but at least we had Space Camp.
Yeah, at least we had Space Camp.
Space Academy.
Goodness gracious. These commoners may have been to camp.
You have to say camp.
The fact that you two aren't f***ing rabid dog hunters wearing the pelts of your many kills collected over the years surprises me.
It's only because Space Camp and or Academy was not created until after Teddy Roosevelt was dead. But the point being that I don't even remember what the point was now because you derailed me. But we did go to Space Academy.
We absolutely did. Not together either.
Right, right.
You were talking about...
I didn't know this. Yeah. That is really cool. Well,
yes, it is.
You should listen to the show. We've talked about it many times.
Anytime. Yeah. Wayne is the biggest NASA space nerd you've ever met in your life. I mean, he just loves space and everything involving NASA and the space program.
So we say everything we can to hurt his feelings.
Because he's never... Unfortunately, the poor soul has never... been to space camp nor space academy.
That is wrong.
I mean, well, you know.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Right. Is that the unfortunate thing that did in my breaking of the cycle of abuse was I became congenial. I became the peacemaker. I became the diplomat.
The elder statesman.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Which.
Persona.
Yeah. That's good sometimes.
Sometimes.
But yeah. The problem is that when it comes time to actually stand
it's
up.
Great when there's a problem.
Right.
When there's not a problem, when it's, should we order pepperoni pizza or cheese pizza? The elder statesman has too much gravitas for that situation.
But also when there's a low problem.
Right.
If someone at the gaming group is being sexist, racist, violent, whatever, I've got an answer and I'll do it.
Absolutely.
But if someone at the table is simply being disruptive because of their social behavior, at low level stuff, once again, the way they play the game, the way they treat other people, but it's always low key. Mm-hmm. It's always breaking the spirit of the law, but not the letter.
The elder statesman does not drop the hammer.
I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm too conflict averse. Right. And what has changed? All right, this is something that changed. And part of the reason I wanted you, Amy, on the show is because you were the one who pointed out something about myself that I did not realize.
That you have a beard?
Well,
it's amazing, by the way.
Thank you. No, no, no.
I've been trying to get him to grow that beard for literally
intellect because
years.
You're losing your vital fluids.
I voted for it. He gave me a choice.
Thank you.
But is she made a comment, this was like yesterday or the day before or something, where she said, one of the things that's unusual about my life is despite being in my 40s, I still have a very substantial friend circle or friend group. In fact, I have many friend groups. And what that has given me is a different perspective because, and this is going to sound so horrible, so let me explain it after I say it. It makes people more disposable. Now, I want to be very...
From a complete numbers standpoint.
Yes,
not
yes.
Referring to them as people or human beings.
Precisely.
Just
I want to make clear
of relationships.
I do not mean that therefore people are less valuable. Feelings are less valuable. I don't mean any of that. I don't mean that I sit down with a ledger and say, well, I've got this many friends.
You know, Broder farted at the restaurant today, so he's out.
Or Amy burned my grilled cheese last time, so I'm done with her.
Which I did.
She did. And I'm still trying to decide a proper and proportional response.
I actually kind of like a burnt grilled cheese a little bit.
It was pretty good. Yeah. I scraped off the carbon.
And she did make a really good nacho mix for me, so we're working through it slowly. This is going to take some time, but we're trying. We're committed. But the point... But anyways, I keep saying the point being because I'm off track all the time. But... What I'm trying to communicate
right.
Is
that you're hungry.
Is not, yeah, I actually am. Is not that the people are disposable in some casual way, but I don't have to flee from conflict the way I once did.
Yeah.
And I think that is unfortunately a reason why a lot of people put up with this BS is they look at their lives.
You were about to say why people put up with my BS.
No,
like, boy, have we.
It's like they look at their lives and say, wow, I've got three or four really good friends.
Right.
Or I've got two really good friends. Or I've got one really good friend. I can't burn that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that having a lot of friends and realizing that fact has now made me like, okay, time to drop the hammer willy-nilly until I'm down to the six I like most. It's not that.
Yeah.
But it's more when something comes up and I work through it intellectually and I first get that fear of, oh no, conflict, that's bad. I don't want to deal with this. It's uncomfortable. It's nerve-wracking. Da-da-da-da-da. But that calculus eventually kicks in of what's the worst case scenario? They don't respond to friendly overtures. They don't want to compromise. Well, and I lose a friend. I can afford that.
It's not even conscious, right? It is so subconscious. It's so like in the back because it's you've been talking to this person and this person doesn't really talk to you back very much. You have to keep nagging them. You say, okay, well, let's go out and let's go to the zoo and do this thing. and they don't respond. And then they keep changing the date. And it's a giant pain. You love them, but they're a giant pain in the ass. But then you have these other friends who are like, Dan, do you want to go to the zoo? I want to fucking take you to the zoo. Yeah. Let's do this shit.
Let's zoo this.
Let's zoo this shit. So, again, not even running an account book here. Not even running a ledger. What is going to happen in these two worlds?
Yeah.
Eventually, the person who you're struggling with is going to just drift away.
The other thing that you have to consider is that the other people at the table are as neurotic and dicked up as you are. So,
I don't know, I'm fantastic.
You're very smart and you're well read.
Yes.
You've got a great imagination.
I'm tall.
And you're very,
I'm getting really tired of you guys.
I'm not talking about him.
Up to each other.
I'm talking about the fan base.
You're not talking about me?
No, I'm talking about the fan base in general, right?
Why are you talking?
But you're also probably not, you know, you again, this is generalization, gross generalization, but you may not be that athletic. You may not be that confident. You may not feel that you're that attractive, right? And you found yourself in this group where you have not only people who share your identity in terms of things that you're passionate about, but they also share the fact that they're intelligent and bombastic and fucking annoying, but also just glass cannons, right? They're fragile people. The people that have a tendency to come across that aggressive and bombastic and know-it-all generally, not always, but generally are much more fragile. So you have this group of people who are all big, creative, bombastic, opinionated people who, dude, they're a house of cards. You say something wrong about the gap in their teeth and they're fucking broken for a week,
so,
right?
There's two places I want to go with that. One, I'm actually going to kick over to Amy. And by the way, I actually want to thank you, Amy, for something really in particular that I have been attempting to accomplish since this show started back in mid-2006. And this episode is the first time it's happened because I list the hosts in alphabetical order. We finally have an ABCD show.
Do we? Wow.
Amy Brodor, Chad Dan.
Nice.
We finally, for the first time in all 15 or 16 or however the hell long we've been doing this, years of this, we finally have an ABCD show.
And that's
I'm
the end
so
of the show.
Glad
thanks, everybody.
I could help.
That's what you bring to this episode.
I do
now want to throw something your way because you were actually the one that said it to me. And so I want you to talk about it. Which is you observed the other day that people that come from a background of abuse or being heavily criticized do not themselves tend to have much ability to deal with criticism. And I want you to talk about that.
Well, I mean, it's just something that I've observed. I mean, it's kind of like you've been burned. It's like almost like a physiological response. And so when you get close to fire, you just react in a much stronger way. So whatever you've suffered in your past, whether it's, you know, rejection or whatever it is, you're both going to be ultra sensitized to it and also desensitized to it. Mm. You're going to have both. So you're hypersensitive to criticism. And then there are ways in which you're desensitized. And there are also ways in which you're going to be more likely to be critical yourself. So that's where you have to be hypervigilant.
Well, and I think it's also worth noting that a lot of trauma occurs when people have their least power. Because people that have power.
Well, that's what abuse is. It isn't about, like, say you get hit.
Yeah.
Say someone above you hits you. I mean, that sucks. It's terrible. It's physically damaging. But ultimately, it is about the removal of power.
Precisely.
It's the removal of your sense of safety. It's the sense of comfort, sense of well-being.
And maybe it's because you're a child and you don't have the tools or the understanding or the resources to defend yourself. And it doesn't have to be physical violence.
Right.
It could be emotional, whatever. Or you're an adult who for some reason does not have the personal or emotional maturity, fortitude, whatever you want to call it, to stand up for themselves. So whatever the real hard reality is, the way it plays out is that you tend to take the abuse when you are in a position where you are profoundly vulnerable. And so the coping mechanisms you come up with, they are ultimately just about defense and survival, not about repair and reconciliation. When Brodor's mom was doing the things she did to him, he was not in a position to stand up for himself, to realize this is wrong, to get out of the situation. You know, these are things that occur later on. And so when
I'm not saying that I thought about killing her in her sleep or even actively went into the kitchen and got a knife and contemplated it. But what I am saying is that I could have done something about it because I was at least clever enough to recognize that she was as vulnerable as I was when she was asleep.
Which is ultimately a horrible way to live. And I'm not blaming you for this, right? I get that kind of damage. But the thing that I'm trying to communicate here is that, therefore, when you go to someone in adulthood, and let's be honest, our hobby, it does not exclusively attract broken toys, but it attracts a lot of them. And as a result, when we go to confront each other, not only are we conflict averse because of our own pain, but the ability to communicate to somebody in a shared spirit of reconciliation and repair is very difficult, because it is very likely the response you're going to get is not from a healthy place of conflict resolution. It's going to be a response they have been programmed to have to horrible power imbalances during abuse. That's their playbook.
It occurs to me, and I didn't take it very seriously until recently, but one of the guys at my gaming table, I brutalized when he was a kid, right? So he's an adult now, and he's doing very, very well, and he's making six figures and yada, 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 super smart like yourselves, IT guy, was spent a lot of time in the military. Well, dude, when he was a kid, he'd come into the fantasy shop, and he was this obnoxious, know-it-all, rotund little prick. Dude, I just rode him like a rented mule. What I did not realize is that I destroyed that kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he grew up and one day realized that, you know, he was just not what he wanted to be. So he started working out and lost a bunch of weight. And he had to have a surgery where they take excess fat off of his body because he lost so much weight. And so he's got a scar that runs all the way around his body from excess skin that they took off.
Wow.
He bettered himself because I was so mean to him.
You specifically?
Yes, me like specifically.
He came to you like, and was like,
I did not realize. I mean, this kid had a terrible, terrible in childhood, and I did not realize how much trauma that I visited upon him, right? Which was terrible. And now he sits at my gaming table and wants to ruin everything that I do.
I couldn't imagine where that rancor comes from.
But I guess the thing is, I don't know. I want to be patient with the people that are at my table. And if you'll forgive me for going back down the rabbit hole of likening it to intercourse, but my product is so good that the last guy that I kicked out of a group,
it is both quality and quantity.
He's actually going to come back into a new game because I love him and he's my friend and I want to be with him and I want to hang out and I want to game with him. Mm-hmm. But he just didn't take the relationship seriously. So we had to break up for some time apart. We had to break up for a bit. We had to take a break.
Learn to appreciate you.
Yeah, he had to learn to appreciate me,
had to forgive himself so he could forgive you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm so angry in particular that I have a hard time with it.
And the guy you abused.
He's one of my favorite people to game with.
Oh, okay.
Because he knows his goddamn place.
Because when you twitch, he recoils.
Yeah.
No, he deliberately, doesn't matter where I sit. Like, if he was at this table, he would insist on sitting where you're at so he could look at me. That's how much I'm his nemesis. But if I called him right now and said, hey, I have a dead hooker in my trunk, dude, he'd help me. I mean, not a goddamn no. It just text me the address. That's all that would happen. Right. And that's, we have this sort of love hate relationship.
Yeah.
So there's something else though that came out of that as I was been thinking about this topic throughout the show, but what we were just talking about reemphasized it. I think something else we need to recognize is people are attracted to any hobby because the hobby fits them. Okay. It's like a puzzle piece. It fits them. Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law, Adam, he's very outdoorsy. He loves nature. He likes the constant change of stimulus. And so he's really big into things like camping and hiking and whatever. And I realize we can nitpick this, and these are going to be overgeneralizations. I'm going to just acknowledge these are overgeneralizations. What Adam is into in that regard are hobbies of activity. Mm-hmm. All right. Two people can go hiking together unless one of them's being a complete asshole to the other.
Like stopping at every fucking poke stop on a 8 mile hike.
Yeah.
It should take a couple of hours, well, you but guys took were, all fucking day.
Well, because you guys were doing, you and Pat were doing different activities.
Yes.
Pat was hunting Pokemon, you were hiking.
Right.
Jesus all
right.
Christ. I mean, that's the crux right there is that.
Yeah, you were after different things. All right. But here's why things, I think, get so particular in our hobby and why people get so defensive. Ours is not primarily a hobby of activities. It is a hobby of ideas. Mm. We come to the table with...
And other people's ideas suck. That's... I get
well,
it.
Well, okay. So you're on the right path here. So people come to the table saying, I want to experiment with this idea. I want to communicate in this way. I've got theories on how the rules work. I've got theories on the best way for the game to work. I've got particular goals for this game, which may include saying, well, I need different people at the table to play particular parts. But boys, you come to the table with a set of ideas. And because of the fact that we, generally speaking, are not a demographic that is, to be blunt, sufficiently active, our core personality, right? The thing about me that you could insult that would bother me most would be to insult not my activities, but to insult my ideas because they are closest to who I am. And I think that's where part of the tension comes from in role-playing games is people sit down at a table and they have very particular ideas and very strong ideas about how they think this hobby should be conducted. And when someone comes along whose ideas are radically incompatible with that, one, I don't think we always do a good job of handling it. And two, I don't know for this reason that it always is even possible to handle. Now, I think we ought to make the attempt. I think we ought to try and peacemake and find middle ground.
That's that escalation that we were talking about earlier.
Because
you start by dropping the hammer.
But give everyone a fair shake before you decide they're a lost cause, assuming what they did isn't absolutely profoundly horrible.
Right.
But I don't think we do that because I think when we hit that point where we realize or we feel like our ideas are being attacked, our views, our intellect, our creative output, whatever you want to label this as, is under attack. That tends to cut too close to the core of who we as a hobby tend to be.
Well, and for me, I find that where I get confused is whether the critique is constructive or not, right? Mm-hmm. And I can get very, very pissy and get very, very prickly hurt feelings. And it's pretty easy for me to go from 0 to 60, where here I am bearing this thing that I've created that I have spent a lot of time, effort, and thought, and you're crapping on it, right? But not only are you crapping on it, you're on a level crapping on me in the time and the effort that I did. But then when you don't add something constructive on top of it and you're just being shitty, even if that's not your intent, I am going to perceive it that way, right? I'm going to look at it as in sort of a critical mocking fashion. If I'm going to take criticism or contribution, then it has to be productive some fashion.
I think that a lot of people have that. A lot of people go through what you're talking about. And the problem that I see that people have with this, it's not you. I mean, it's just a lot, most people, right? Is there's these layers of things, right? It's like you put a lot of time and effort into it. They're kind of crapping on it. They're not really adding anything to it. And what is actually happening here is there are a couple of different problems. We don't know what the solutions are. And instead of looking for the solutions, we are, for whatever reason, holding that inside of us.
Well, yeah, because I've put all this goddamn effort into this fucking game, and you come to my house and you shit up on my toilet every goddamn week and leave your fucking trash on my goddamn table.
See,
don't put forth any effort whatsoever. And then you have the audacity in my house at my table to be a fucking asshole. Oh, I lose my goddamn mind.
So here's the problem.
Definitely no wrench for you this episode.
here's the problem with that.
And that's 60.
Yeah. So that's the problem is that story, what the listeners are hearing right now is someone sits down at Brodor's table. First time, chapter 1, book 1, word 1, and they spill their drink, and they don't really do a good job of cleaning it up. Brodor's getting his fucking gun.
Yeah. Which, and he's just go, which is so, not true.
Which is not true. But yeah. What is happening, and I'm not part of your gaming group, I've never seen this, but what I'm going to guess is the reality of the situation here is that you have mini games over a long period of time, and you have multiple different small problems, and no one is finding any solutions to them. No one's saying anything about them, because like you said, hey, you got a game to run, man. You right. put a lot of your stuff into this, and players aren't doing anything about it, because I'll go back to one of your big hangups, Dan, that I am totally on board with. Well, that's the game master's problem. The game master is the leader of the group who should be taking. Now, bullshit, we're friends. Everybody deals with this shit.
I'll say on top of that, the game master in terms
is
of
trying to run a fucking game.
Yeah, they are carrying the heaviest load.
Right.
And now you also want them to socially right. coach.
So you have these little problems, little problems, little problems. When you drain the vitriol from it, and when you dial it back and say, okay, we are not at chapter 20 of the explosive drama book here of Brodor shooting someone. We're at chapter 1 and somebody spilt their drink. All of these things you listed, all of these things this person, quote unquote, did.
No, that's an amalgamation of many right, gamers right. in my life.
What I hear, because I'm not angry, every single one of those has a solution.
Right.
If no one is solving it, and then we go from chapter 1 to chapter 2 to chapter 3 to chapter 4 and blah, 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 blah. And they've all piled up and they have all drained the money out of Mike's gaming group account. And there's no one, there's no bankroller there who's trying to solve problems or defend people. And Mike is at the end of his rope because his bank is now insolvent and he's going to have to start firing people. It may collapse the bank. He sees this.
Oh, no, I'll do what many other industries should do and tell the world to f*** off, like what the tobacco industry right. should do. If we're so terrible, f*** it, close the doors. We're done. I've quit more games because yeah. of one person's shitty behavior. I'm not proud of it.
Right.
But
so.
But see, that's the whole point. You don't want to be in a situation where you drive people off.
Yeah.
Sure. So you want to have the balls. Mm-hmm. To, you know, confront the bad behavior so you save your group and you save the right. game, which is actually the unselfish thing to do. So what Dan was saying is essentially it seems nice to not confront, but it's actually very selfish because you're causing many more problems for the group and for a number of people by not dealing with the one problem.
We had a problem player, and I'm not going to name names, but everybody... Dan especially is going to be, oh, it's so-and-so, and he's right. But we had a problem player in our group. And really, they were there for years, literally years. The problems never got better. We tried to solve some of them. They never got better, right? In fact, in some ways, they got a little worse. And it just is little things that added up over the years. And part of the problem was that the ostensive leader, who's not me, of the group... hated conflict. Mm-hmm. Like if he had to put one thing on a piece of paper that he hated the most, it is conflict and confrontation. But he also loved bitching about stuff behind everyone, not everyone's, but behind their yeah. back. You know, like you were saying earlier, the venting, the release, the kibitzing, the sort of group, it's like, yeah, we're in this together, made for a very bad situation. It was almost unethical. When some of our group members were talking to a mutual friend of ours years later, after this person had finally, by me, been kicked out, we told him all these horror stories, all of our gaming horror stories, we were laughing about it. And he was like, how long were they with the group? Oh man, that was what, 5 years, 6 years? He's like, I would have kicked him out after the third session. Why did you let it go so long? I actually wrote a letter to the person that it was the breakup letter, right?
Oh, gosh.
And I made...
Now I have the theme song to the sitcom Dear John running through my head.
I made the other people sign on to the letter, too. I was like, I'm willing to type
it. That's f***ing metal.
I'm like, I'm willing to type it. I'm willing to deliver it. You guys need to
wait, this
sign
is a real
it.
Thing. I thought you were talking metaphorically.
No, this happened.
Wow. A real breakup letter. Okay.
And it even wasn't a breakup yeah. letter so much as here are the problems we are having. I don't know what the solution is.
But the onus was on him. It was like, hey, if you've got a solution.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't actually say, you know, you're out. But I've said, you know, here's these problems, right?
I think I've made this joke before, but I really do want to do a job like George Clooney in Up and Away. Isn't that the name of the movie? Yeah. So, because his job is to fire people, right? And I just want to be the guy. I roll into your town and I kick people out of your gaming group for you.
So before you've talked about being a GM for hire.
Yeah.
Now you just basically want
to
be
I'll do both.
You just want to be an a-hole for hire.
Yeah, I'll just listen, Amy, it's not working out. You're not in the game group anymore. I'm really sorry.
Actually, that's the great thing about the movie, right? Is that at first, yeah, this guy is the devil. This guy is the a-hole for hire who caps people in the back of the head in mass when there's mass layoffs because the bosses are too cowardly to do it.
Yeah.
And so the movie sets him up to be this just king jerk. And he has like someone with him who he's like training. And through the course of the movie, he's like, you find out if you're being a jerk, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
You know, these are human beings and they will get fired. They're being laid off. It is happening.
Yeah.
Do you want an anonymous email saying get out, or do you want a human being to look at them and who can let them down or to handle the situation? It's like, this is what's happening. It's not your fault. There's mass layoffs. Here's the severance package. And here's what is going on.
Well,
here's the honorable exit.
This situation is different, though, because I'd be like, well, listen, Carl, it's about your hygiene.
Right.
It's about the fur on your teeth. And we're not going to let you play in the group anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're sorry. Actually, that's a lie, Carl. We're not sorry at all.
That reminded me of what I was trying to, the point I was getting at with the letter, though, was in the letter I said, because this has been going on for years, the whole unethical thing of, yeah, you should have taken care of this many years ago. I said, this is our fault. This isn't your fault. This is our fault. And this wasn't like, oh, it's not you, it's me sort of thing. No, I to this day, I'm serious. We didn't do anything. We did not handle the situation. It's not that we handled the situation badly. We didn't handle the situation. The reasons why we didn't, but we didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And now here we are years later. And instead of a, you know what? It's just not working out. Well, and it's a fucking multi-paragraph breakup letter.
Well, and I tell you, I think you did the right thing by having everyone sign on to it, because you forced them through exposure therapy to start getting some gusto or getting some chutzpah. Or
and no one was provided the opportunity to say like, I didn't know Chad wrote you that letter.
Even though
they proofread it for you.
Yeah. Well, and also if it's who I'm thinking, there was a profound amount of social currency tied up in this.
Yes.
That it's, doing this was.
There was a situation.
I can't get into it without outing the person.
It's nobody's business.
But there was a thing. It was not going to be something that was going to be easy for someone to throw a grenade and walk away from.
And that situation, which again, to this day, I blame myself. Should have done something earlier when it was like, you know what, this just isn't working out. And it'd be like, okay, cool, I'll go find something else to do. It's my fault. That was it. That was the last layer. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. That's when I said, I will never kick another person out of a group again. Other people will have to take that up. But I would support it, but I'm not going to do it again.
Well, and I think that the important lesson for me when I was doing management talks with Gamma, I would tell people this, that look, the more challenging the conversation, the more you're dreading the conversation, the more important it is to have with that person, right? That's how significant it is, right? Mm-hmm. So fight into that ambush. But also, if your employees suck, ultimately it's your fault. If the people playing at your table aren't participating in a fashion that you appreciate or that your group appreciates, well, it's exactly as you pointed out, you're the responsible parties for allowing the behavior to occur.
Yep.
Take that, Dan. No profanity, maturity, wise.
Oh, now. You're at the end of an episode where people are going to feel like they're on a damn submarine picking up comms traffic. No, it's going to sound like they've got dueling sonar systems that are trying to put on a rave. All the while they're getting Morse code transmissions.
It's absolutely brilliant. You start off the episode saying intelligent, even-handed things.
Yeah.
the middle of the episode is like
the part then, that no one remembers yep. and no one gives a shit.
And then the end of it, the part that everyone remembers is, wow, man, that Brodor guy.
Yeah,
he's cool.
Yeah, he's just got to bring the intro and the outro.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You should have been a lawyer. You just argued both sides convincingly, and I didn't totally believe you on either.
And the essay and the reality here is what the audience is going to get from is Brodor's going to be like, well, beep, 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 and it's going to be like, huh.
It's because I...
Why do those guys shit on Brodor so much?
Because I do oscillate very, very regularly between extreme viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm a crazy person. It's that it takes me a long time to suss something out. And I recognize that doesn't mean that I'm dumb. It just means that my brain functions.
No, dumb people don't try and figure stuff out.
Yeah,
people try and figure stuff out. That's what you're doing.
I figure things out by talking out loud a lot.
Yeah,
that's
right.
How I process.
So I need to, but I also have conviction for both attitudes because I really do believe as a manager, these are the important things in a professional setting.
Yep.
The problem is that gaming isn't a professional setting. It's a personal setting. So when things don't go well or in a fashion that I want them to, not only does it irritate me, but it also hurts my feelings because these are people that I care about.
And we talked about that on his interview because at near the end of the interview, I decided to flip the whole thing and just, you know, basically try and help him with some of his problems.
With my bull.
Yeah. Cool.
It's a good interview, though.
Thanks, man. You're doing a good job. Now I'm going to get all blushy.
Good.
I don't think I'm going to bother linking anything in the show notes because I can't imagine how much time, energy, and money is going to go into bleeping Brodor. But I do
want to... You know what you should do? You should make me edit not this one.
Yes, but this one. I think I should make you edit this episode. One. And so, yeah, that's what fixed my speech. Wayne's like, Dan, you're so easy to edit for game notes. I'm like, Wayne, because I've been doing this for too many years and too many of those, I was the primary editor. You fix your... When you are your own problem, you fix you really fast.
Yes.
When you're tripping over your own...
All right. If you're me.
So for the healthier people, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
See ya.